The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to Report from Europe. This is Mike Consul. Joining me by phone is one of our most industrious contributing writers. That would be Sheila Hopkins. She's the author of an article that appears in the April 2017 edition of Institutional Real Estate Europe, headlined, "Let Us Entertain You. Retail Just Isn't What It Used to Be." Sheila, good morning.
Good morning.
So if retail isn't what it used to be, what is it over there in Europe?
Well, it's now an entertainment, and it's not just in Europe. It's everywhere. That retail just isn't, let's go pick up a pair of shoes and go home. It's let's go out with friends and maybe pick up that pair of shoes, but let's also maybe go to a movie or let's have a good meal. Maybe there's a show being done in the rotunda or there's an ice skating rink or a wall climbing facility. It's social. Even if you're going to the grocery, you're probably sitting there looking at the kumquats while you're on your phone, talking to someone about them or taking a picture of them to show somebody. Can you believe there's kumquats in this grocery? It's just not shopping anymore.
According to your article, retail has been one of the best performing sectors in this particular cycle that we're in. Can that performance continue? I mean, there's an awful lot of people who are feeling like the thread is running out as far as this particular cycle. What are the indications as to how sustainable the retail boom in Europe is?
Well, the bottom line is, yes, it's still going to do well, that we shop when we feel good and we shop when we feel bad. Again, because it's become so social, there really is something about retail therapy, I think, that is real. And so it isn't as dependent on some of the cycles as it used to be. But that being said, it probably won't be as good as it has been. It still is relatively good. When we look back, probably 2015 will turn out to be the peak for both investment volumes and returns in Europe. 2016 was good, but not quite as good. 2017 is probably going to be not quite as good as 2016. And what's kind of interesting, particularly in Europe, is that it's not that there's a lack of interest or a lack of demand or sketchy fundamentals. It's simply a lack of supply. The investors may very well want to add retail to their portfolio because, again, it is kind of connected to recessions and economics and all that, but we always need the essentials. So there's always going to be some shopping going on. But the discipline that we've seen from the developers in the past few years has actually turned out to be a two-edged sword. While it's keeping supply in check so that oversupply that normally causes real estate recessions, that's not going to happen, or at least that's not going to be the cause. But it also means there's simply a lack of investment-grade stock for investors to invest in. And so while there's been, lack of stock, they're still looking for things, and they'd certainly like to find more, but volumes are just simply going to decrease. Another reason is that low cap rates, because of the competition from this lack of stock, cap rates have compressed, and so managers aren't selling. They don't need to sell. They're not in a recession. They didn't over-leverage. They don't need to get out from under from holding their asset, so they're holding on, which, again, decreases the amount of assets out there that investors can get to. And, and I'm not going to downplay the political uncertainty. That's certainly out there as well. We can't ignore the fact that there's Brexit and elections happening in a number of the countries that make investors a little leery and uncertain about where things are going. But really, research has shown that in general, political shenanigans rarely affect consumer spending. In fact, when people feel a little uncertain, they go out and spend more. They just sort of like to do that. It makes them feel good. So as long as wages are going in the right direction, which they are even if they're going slowly, and labor market is still good, which it is even if it's not growing quickly, households tend to continue to spend. And so, you know, yields are falling because of the compression, but investors are still buying when they can. At least the retail families are buying because they're planning on holding on for decades. And high net worth individuals and sovereign wealth funds are buying because they see higher returns than they can get from bonds. And none of these need to pay out liabilities the way pension funds and insurance companies do. They expect to hold on for 10 or 15 or 20 years. So no matter what the price is now, they expect it to be higher when they eventually sell. So, you know, it's all coming together with a lack of supply is causing competition. Competition is causing falling yields and compressed prices. And so that brings us to the next logical step. With if you've got a lack of supply and competition, some investors are beginning to look outside the prime areas, into the secondary areas or into a little bit riskier retail sectors. But they need to be really careful because all retail is not equal. We hear retail is a great investment, but even prime retail isn't equal. The entire world seems to be splitting into two halves between the have-nots and the haves and the have-nots, and retail is no exception. The difference is instead of having haves and have-nots, like just two camps, the haves are at the top and the bottom, and the have-nots sort of floating aimlessly around the middle. And that's the area that investors really need to watch out for, to stay away from that middle.
Okay, so let me back up just a minute. You did indicate that retail's probably not going to do as well as a tight supply. Are there other dynamics at work?
You know, there are certainly other dynamics. The primary one probably is the tight supply. It has forced prices up to the point that your major institutional investors simply can't justify the yields they get at those prices because they don't cover the liabilities then. The returns they're getting won't cover the liabilities, and they need to look someplace else to find an investment that does cover those liabilities. The cycle, yes, it's been a long cycle, about 8 years now. But honestly, everyone keeps thinking it should be ending, but no one can quite point to an event that will cause it to end. You kind of feel it's getting long in the tooth. Everyone asks what inning we're in. I don't know what it is about baseball, but everyone loves to ask what inning we're in. And, you know, several years ago, we were already supposedly in the fifth or sixth or seventh inning. We have to be well into extra innings by this time. And they still don't know when it's going to end. You know, they've brought in the third pitcher and the fourth pitcher and fifth and all that. And so it's a gut feeling that we must be coming to an end. No one can point to where or why, what's going to end it. My feeling is it will probably be a political event as opposed to a economic event, but I don't know, and I don't think anyone knows. So, yes, there's other things that are affecting retail. It probably is still a better investment than some of the other investments. Office certainly is being hit harder right now than retail is. Logistics is probably the best one out there at all, but that is based on retail, too. That's based on the e-commerce growth is driving logistics. And that's where a lot of the money's going. From people that had wanted to stay in retail are finding the prices too high, they're going to logistics because it's sort of following the retail growth without having to be in retail itself.
Well, let's talk about that struggling middle. Why is the middle struggling?
E-commerce really gets down to the bottom line, has a lot to do with it. But like most things in the world, things that are already weakened get hurt more than things that are stronger when there's disruption in a marketplace. And people right now are making a very deliberate decisions on how and where to shop. And they're simply adding shopping to their social mix rather than just being an activity in and of itself. So if I want a day out with friends, I can go to one of the high-end lifestyle centers and shop and see a movie and go to the restaurant and, you know, see a live show, do all kinds of things. And if I need something essential, I'll just run down the street to the local grocery-anchored strip mall and pick that up. But for anything else, if I'm not planning a social day or it's not something essential, it's just as easy to go online as it is to go out to a mid-market-type retail center to pick up, you know, a T-shirt or a pair of pants. So I'll go online, I'll buy that, and I'll probably do it again once I do it once. It's simply more time efficient, often cost effective. And so it's that mid-market that can't offer anything else except straight shopping that sort of is getting really hurt by the e-commerce. And a recent report by Savills has come out that has found that internet sales in the region really impacts a region once it reaches 5 to 6% of the total retail sales. And it's well past that in some of the biggest markets, such as the UK and Germany. And a research group called GfK estimates that online sales or turnovers in Germany have risen 230% since 2005. They were at 3.2% of the total sales in 2005, and last year they were just under 10%. So that's a huge jump in how much shopping is being done, you know, online.
So I'm assuming the traditional retailers are adapting to e-commerce by what you were referring to earlier, this kind of let us entertain you concept that we're going to give you an experience that you just don't get from online shopping. Is that kind of it in a nutshell?
That's it in a nutshell, but they're also joining the online trend. I mean, every on-land shopper or retailer now has an online section that allows you to buy their things online. And then you can often take them back to the stores if you want to return it. They have found if you're returning an online purchase, you very often will buy something else while you're there in the store. So by offering an online or the ability to shop online, they are actually driving their brick-and-mortar sales as well. But conversely, the online retailers are beginning to get some on-land presence that you're finding them beginning to open physical pickup and return centers in central locations, like easily accessible retail parks are being used as strategic hubs for click and collect and online order deliveries. So there's sort of this merging now, this omni-channel strategy that's beginning to invade retail, where both sides, they have their main part, whether they're mainly online or mainly, you know, traditional, but then they also offer the other part. And again, this is where the mid-market seems to be falling apart, that they just haven't been able to, you know, access that extra part, that multi-channel that gives them the oomph that they need. And so they're facing increasing pressure from all sides.
So what will happen, what are the indications that you get as to what will happen to the middle market, the struggling malls and storefronts, some of these places that really aren't equipped to provide the sort of any kind of real experience? A lot of times they're just outdated, perhaps too small, perhaps they don't have the economic base to really bring that to the fore. What do you see happening with that, with those middle market malls and storefronts?
Well, a lot of them will just keep limping along. You know, they'll change owners, they'll change tenant mixes, but they'll never really succeed. Others will completely fail. I know here in the States, we just heard that Sears really doesn't think it's going to be able to continue as an ongoing enterprise. And when that happens, there will be a whole lot of mid-market malls here in the States that will become empty. And that same type of department store and failure is happening in Europe as well. But, you know, again, with every failure, there's also someone's opportunity. And those empty, failed buildings can offer some interesting opportunities to repurpose for the investor that's maybe looking for a little bit of a boost to their retail investment.
Mm-hmm. So instead of new construction necessarily, it could be value-add construction.
Absolutely. They're calling it adaptive reuse is sort of the new term for this. I don't know if it's new. It's new to me. And it's going to become probably one of the major property trends of the future. And in the United States, we've seen it already playing out with a lot of empty malls have become satellite university campuses and office buildings and storage centers. Churches are moving into malls and student housing and museums. Almost anything they could use a big empty space is all looking at these empty malls that are already built with lots of parking normally and moving in. And the key is the ability of investors and owners to work with local officials to find appropriate uses. You know, the main reason these mid-market centers are struggling is they just don't serve a need anymore. And that's sort of the basic of everything. If there's no need for it, it's going to fail. And investors who thought they were allocating to retail, you know, might not be thrilled to end up with student housing or a museum in their facility, but it'd still be better than an empty building. And in, this is it's further along in the United States than Europe as far as this adaptive reuse, because Europe just hasn't had the over-retailing that the United States has. So it's not seeing the large shift yet to malls being completely changed to something else. Although I think that probably will happen as people begin to, you know, just look outside the box or and see, get an idea of what these things can do. But we are seeing repositioning, certainly, where mid-range malls are being moved into high or affordable level, high-end malls with a lot of recreation-type facilities, or affordable level malls with, you know, almost bare bones. Here, you're coming to get your groceries. Come in, get them, and go. And so retail's always been adaptive, and right now this is what how it's adapting. And I think investors also will adapt. They're, you know, looking to stay, they are looking to stay away from the middle. So again, it's, unfortunately, it's kind of a domino effect where the middle is struggling, and so investors stay away and don't put money into it, and because they don't have money put into it, they struggle even more. And it's just a slope that they're going to have a hard time stopping and getting the money to change themselves into what is really needed for their area, their local area, their catchment. And it will be an interesting way to see which way it goes. But I think retail component in general is just becoming a part of the entertainment mix that we're all living with now. And that's the way investors will begin looking at it too.